The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I want to start by sharing with you a segment of a story that I really like by E.T. A. Hoffmann, the German romantic author. It's about an inventor, a scientist, who liked to create all kinds of wild things, and his grand opus became this life-size mechanical doll. He was so proud of it that he began to see this doll as his daughter. So he decides he's going to organize a ball to introduce this young lady to society. And in the ball, a young man shows up, and the proud father wants to introduce his daughter, Olympia. The young man is very much taken by her beauty and sits enthusiastically next to her and launches into this long monologue. He gets more and more enthusiastic as he's going along. He even gets the sense that this lovely woman is responding to his coquettish glances. And Olympia, very much in the manner of a 19th century proper lady, nods and demurely adds here and there, "Ah, yes, 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 yes." And so the young man continues enthusiastically on and on. After a long monologue, the young man gets up, bows to her, and goes off to look for the father, and tells the father, "I have to congratulate you. What a charming daughter you have, and what intelligence. I've had the most fascinating conversation with her." So that's as much of the story I'll tell you. Now, what does this story have to do with the Dharma and for us? What I like very much about this story is that Hoffmann really pokes fun at this very human characteristic of us being so self-preoccupied that we stop seeing the other, that we can be so full of ourselves at times that we can talk without taking any note who it is we have in front of us. I would imagine everybody here has had the experience of sitting with somebody where you feel, "I could as well be wallpaper." And the person just talks on, and you can be yawning away, and the person doesn't notice. But I'm also sure that you've had the experience of being on the other side, where you are listening to somebody, and you find yourself unable to focus. And you notice that at least big chunks of the conversation, you're not really listening. So, obviously, this is a topic that has a lot to do with mindfulness and with this practice. It's the gift of listening that I want to make as the topic for this talk. And listening is the other side of the coin of speech, of right speech, of right speaking, right? And some of you know, right speech is part of the Noble Eightfold Path. It's number 4 in the 8 steps, and it's part of the ethics or sila group. So it has all to do with our ability to, when we speak, how much do we truly, respectfully perceive the other? And when we're listening, how much are we able to apply mindfulness so that we are truly present to what's happening? I like the saying that goes, we have two ears and one mouth, and therefore we should listen twice as much as we speak. So in this practice, we can take our time to investigate what are the obstacles that get in our way when we are trying to listen to others. You know, we know that it's not something that if you get it once right, you got it set for the rest of your life. There are times when we're really able to be present, and there are times when it's a real challenge for us. There are three main qualities that we can crystallize of what makes wise listening or this gift of listening really happen. And I want to look at these three qualities. The first one is a quiet mind. The second one is mindfulness. And the third one is empathy. So mental quietude, if we take it at the most gross level, when we're talking to somebody, if there is external noise, we can't hear the person. That's so obvious, right? When there is internal noise, we can't hear either. The most difficult to work one with is the internal noise, of course. I don't know if you've already noticed how interesting it is that the very same noise, you can have two people listening to the same noise, one person with a quiet mind will hear the sound, it'll be there, no problem. And that the second person with an agitated mind will be very uncomfortable, agitated. How could they do this? This is so disturbing to my work. So it's quite important to notice that the same noise, even for us, one day can be no problem. The next day, if we are agitated, will be difficult. I had a very clear experience of this a few years ago. I was at IMS in Massachusetts for their long retreat, you know, the six-week retreat. And right outside the meditation hall, they were constructing new dorms. So sometimes the noise was incredible. You know, heavy machinery, drills, pipes were going down on the ground. And it was very wonderful to see how my mind had gotten quiet enough through the weeks that even when the very heavy machinery was making its racket, I was able to sit and be fine and feel peaceful and not have this, if only this weren't here, I could meditate well. Right, which we do a lot. If only this wasn't there, I would be okay. Mental quietude and the ability to listen has all to do with a soft body. Have you noticed that? It might be kind of unusual for somebody, but if you find yourself talking to somebody or listening to somebody and you notice yourself not being able to focus, rather than recriminate yourself and get upset, just scan your body, especially the belly, and see, can you release parts of your body? And you begin to hear the other person better. I got to practice this quite a bit with a very difficult boss I had several years ago. And I made it a practice every time I was asked to go and talk to her in her office. I would challenge myself, okay, how many times will I be able this time to connect with my body and say, relax? And it was pretty amazing. You know, I was listening to her and I would go, one, and two. And it was really, I got to be quite good at having this dual attention that we work with in mindfulness, outside attention and the inside attention. And yes, I began to be able to listen to her better, because when my body was soft, then the mind would not be so readily into being reactive and wanting to contradict and say, no, but you're not being fair, I did, da 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 da. Some of you who've sat retreats, even if it's just a weekend, notice when you come out of retreat, you can sit and you feel like, I can hear you for the longest time, and it's fine, and I can hear everything. It's a very wonderful state when you feel I can really be present for you. And the other person feels it too. It's very palpable for both people involved. Now, in our very busy, busy life, I find that one of the most difficult things is what I call not to fall into debt with ourselves. When we fall into debt with ourselves, we're not able to listen to the other. And what I mean by falling in debt with ourselves is that we do not take time off, empty time, or to meditate. Meditation is a way to allow the mind to undo all its tension, to digest all the stimulus. Like, I don't know if you've noticed it, sometimes you sit and you realize, oh, I've been worried about this and I hadn't noticed. Or I'm really angry with this person and I hadn't noticed. Or something very, very simple, like I'm hungry and I hadn't even noticed. So this empty time or ability to catch up with ourselves and not to be in debt with ourselves allows us then to really be present for the other, to really listen. A quiet mind will not want to interrupt. There's just not that impetus there. You have patience to wait till the person comes to a stop. And these two questions that I want to pose to you, I find very interesting. Do we listen with the intention to understand? Or do we listen with the intent to reply? Notice how often, while the person is speaking, we are already thinking of the answer, and therefore 50% of what they told us, we didn't hear anymore because we are busy thinking of what we're going to say. Another way of offering a beautiful gift with a quiet mind when we're listening is that we not only listen to what is being said, but what is not being said. Have you ever had the experience that somebody listens to you with such care and presence that they're reading between the lines, and then they present something back to you, something you didn't even quite understand yourself? That's a tremendous gift when somebody does that for you. We seek those people out because they enrich us. when this reading between the lines happened, when somebody else is doing it for us, it communicates to us that they really care, that we really matter. And that's a very, very important feeling to have. There's a sense of connection. We're here together. Now, let's go now to the second quality, the mindfulness. So the mindfulness, as I said before, is an essential part because the mindfulness teaches us to be aware of the outside experience and of the inner experience at the same time. It's this dual attention that is happening. When this is taking place, I will notice the forward leaning and push of my body when I want to interrupt, to bring in my opinion, my views. Have you noticed that it feels kind of like, it's like this push. And if there is this inner awareness, I say, okay, just take a deep breath and don't have to lean forward, just come back, wait, listen the person out. Another way that mindfulness is very helpful is that it protects us from falling into the dynamic of a, what I call, verbal sparring. Have you ever been in a conversation where you are not constructing together, you're fighting? It's like a sword fight, but you're sparring with words. And neither is listening to the other. That's a very sad dynamic when you really notice it. There's words, there is language going, but there's no connection. There's a sense of isolation. Mindfulness will also make us aware of the moment that we disconnect. And because mindfulness teaches us genuineness and honesty, right? Mindfulness is all about what is real, not what we want it to be. So if we are listening to somebody and we notice, oof, I spaced out for a moment, the honesty that we've trained ourselves with the mindfulness, kicks in, and then that overrides perhaps a little shyness that we have to just have the courage to say, I'm sorry, could you please repeat? I got distracted for a moment. Usually people are very nice about repeating. They appreciate that you're being honest. And I don't know if you've noticed, I certainly can see it in people's eyes when they suddenly disconnect. And I've learned to stop speaking at that point. And it's kind of interesting because they kind of look at me. So, because if you know that they're not listening, is what's the point, right? There's no need to talk, just to hear yourself talk. So it's a tremendous gift that we give ourselves and others so that we don't have to fall into this alienated feeling that we so often have when talking to other people. And we sometimes blame ourselves. It's like, why do I feel so disconnected? Usually it's happening in both ways. Partly, it's not all on our side. It's both parties. I've heard Gil say something that I find very wonderful. He says, the one who does the listening does the loving. So it's just this ability to really be open and receiving what the other one is giving. It's that presence. The beauty of listening with a mindful mind that is not reactive is that it very often gives us or takes us to places where we see suddenly solutions that we didn't think existed. The Norwegian sociologist Johan Galtung, a pioneer in world peace studies and conflict resolution, was invited to mediate years ago between Peru and Ecuador. Peru and Ecuador had a territory that bordered with the Andes, and both countries felt that that was their territory. They had been at war over that territory since 1941, so over by the time that they looked for help, it was over 50 years they had been at war over this territory. Thousands of lives had been lost over this feud. And a group of young people said, enough. We want a different kind of approach here. So they got in touch with Johan Galtung and invited him to come and invited him to talk to the representatives of Peru and Ecuador. Johan Galtung's philosophy is to listen fully with full respect to both sides, which he did. And sure enough, after he listened, he came up with a beautiful, creative solution. What he suggested was that this territory was to become a national park for both Peru and Ecuador, and for all the children in both countries to go and spend their vacation with their families. Both countries were supposed to be responsible for the upkeep of the park. When we listen to this, it's like, oh yeah, how come it didn't occur to anybody else before? But it didn't. When they heard the suggestion, they loved it, and it was adopted. And since then, there hasn't been any war, and there is this beautiful park there. So here's a lovely example of a different way of going about conflict, the power of the gift of listening. And now let's get to the last one, empathy. When we're being heard with empathy, we feel safe. We feel heard, seen. Our bodies soften, and we know we matter. If our language happens to be halting, if we're stammering, or even stuttering, and somebody is listening to us with empathy, suddenly we don't have any problem with our language and it flows. And then when we listen with empathy, we feel connected and our hearts feel unguarded. There is a beautiful Zen story that for me captures very, very lovely this aspect of listening with empathy. It is about a father of a young man who had gotten into a very questionable life. You know, he had bad company, he was drinking, staying out nights, and the father was very, very worried. So he came to see the Zen master and said, "Would you help me? Would you talk to my son?" The master listened very carefully, and he said, "Sure, I will talk to your son." So a date was arranged for the two of them to come. And I want you to imagine the scene, because for me it's very visual. They arrive, the master very gracefully invites them to come in, to sit down, to have tea. And I can just visualize the father, hands clasped, leaning forward, just expecting any moment this master is going to talk reason to my son. The son, slumped, kind of wishing he wasn't there, waiting any moment that the sermon is going to come down on him. And the master, very gracefully sitting there, engaging father and son in just pleasantries while he serves the tea. Well, time started to pass, and the master wasn't bringing up the topic. The father was getting a little bit more and more impatient. About an hour went by. The master got up and said, "Thank you so much for coming to visit me." And the father's heart just sank. He said, "Well, he forgot. I'm sure he forgot. He decided not to talk to the son." So he's very disappointed. So there they are in the vestibule, getting ready to go. The son is bent over tying his shoes. As he's bent over tying his shoe, a drop of water, one single drop of water, falls on his shoe. The young man looks up and sees the master standing over him. He's crying. These are tears coming down his face. No word was said at all. The father and the son left. The story goes that the son was so touched in the moment that he saw how this master, in the most gentlest and most compassionate way, was reflecting back to him the pain that he was inflicting to himself and to others through his behavior. No words were necessary. That's what reached him. The drama of recrimination became completely superfluous. And so that is the gift of listening with empathy. So I want us to take a few minutes in silence. Maybe if you feel like closing your eyes and just want to take a time to reflect about what I shared with you. And take a moment to investigate, how do you relate to the gift of listening? For you as a listener and for you as a speaker. bring to mind a time when you felt that you were really listened by somebody. And now bring to mind a time when you know you were really able to be there and listen to somebody else. How did it come about? Was there a quiet mind? Was there mindfulness? Was there empathy? So I'd love to hear from you. It's my turn to listen. And it's also okay if we make it very short today. A short talk on listening, I think, is appropriate. So would anybody like to ask something, share an idea? Is there a particular area where it's more challenging for listening, for being present? Yes, can you pass the mic?
Things. Oh, sorry. You know how men thinks, typically we tend to want to solve problems. So the empathy part, I find it really challenging versus when I listen to a woman talking. They tend to actually just want to be heard, and mm-hmm. the empathy part is so important of that. So although I know I'm not a woman, but I don't know how to get over that, the empathy part.
Yeah,
and that ties also into what we do at work. You know, as a manager, part of my job is to solve problems. The yes. empathy part, although it's important, but at the end of the day, the value that I add is to listen, identify the problem, and solve it. But outside of work, it's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
with my partner, particularly. You know, she doesn't want me to solve her problem. She just wants me to listen.
Yes.
So that's a really challenging, like I could not think when I was reflecting, what was the last time I felt true empathy? I couldn't think of a simple example.
Really?
Which is really sad.
Hmm. Well, it might come later. You know, sometimes when we get these questions, I've had people who tell me afterwards, oh, it came to me in a dream and I remembered a time. But what you're saying is so classic, and although I try to stay away from stereotyping gender differences, but it seems like such a classic difference, you know, that women talk to each other very much wanting to just be heard and be held and accepted. And as you said, so you put it very clearly, many people have jobs where their job is to solve problems the whole day. And so it's very hard to turn that off when you get home. But once you know that clearly, yes, very gently, happily turn it off. Say, oh, I don't have to solve anybody's problem. It's so much easier to just listen and to just mirror back what you're listening. So rather than solving, just to listen to her and to say, oh, it must be difficult, or it must be wonderful, or it must be exciting to feel or to have these thoughts or to have these activities that are coming. So just kind of mirroring, just a couple words so she knows you're listening. It goes very far, right? Yes. I think that's something that we as women, I think, have the responsibility to teach our children, and especially our sons, you know, that is, because it can create so much pain and so much conflict between couples. And it's lovely when you're talking to a partner and he looks at you and he says, oh, it must be very difficult what you're going through. Wow. Your partner will melt. You're welcome. Yes, with the mic over here, please.
So I guess I just wanted to share an experience where I had trouble listening, and that's where a long time ago, you know, I heard about this really provocative kind of talk radio show host that shall not be named, so I listened to him for a while, and he's like kind of the opposite political spectrum mm-hmm. from me, and he was really provocative and really kind of hateful, sort of, and kind of interesting to hear what, you know, somebody completely opposite from what you think, you know, is saying for a while. But after a while, it just got really, really frustrating, and I kind of wanted to respond, but it's in that kind of situation, you're not able to respond. Even if you call in, you're going to be basically at their mercy, sort of. You can't really respond in any meaningful way. So I just stopped listening, and I'm not sure how I could, you know, really feel empathy towards like that much, somebody with that much like hatred sort of coming out of them.
Yeah, you know, you're mentioning a situation that's within the spectrum, I would say one of the most difficult ones in the political realm, and especially when somebody is in a very extremist place and there's a lot of hate that's being expressed. It is very, very difficult to listen to something like that. what we have to kind of keep in mind is that listening without getting into a knot doesn't mean that you agree, doesn't mean that you condone it. You listen and you pay attention that it's really doing something to your body. In a situation like when you're listening to the radio, you have an option. Is it skillful for me to continue listening or not? And if we take it dharmically to the extreme, and we can think of what the Dalai Lama has said so many, many times, and where he says, you know, I practice to make sure that I don't allow myself to put the Chinese people out of my heart who have tormented the people, my people in Tibet. You know, that's pretty intense, you know, the clashes that have been happening in Tibet. And for him to take it to that extreme, you know, if you've had somebody torturing your people, and to say, I'm not going to put them out of my heart. It's kind of the very advanced practice. But it is a very wonderful goal to keep for us in mind, because we know that hate is just going to produce more hate, right? And for example, in the situation with Johann Galtung, if he had in some ways, suppose that one of the sides had expressed things in a very unskillful way, and he had allowed himself to be swept up by those emotions, he couldn't have come up with a creative solution. So it's a practice that takes time, years, to be able to not to be totally neutral and people, or that people can walk over you, but that you you have your values, but you don't cultivate hate. You don't lash out. Does that make sense? That can be kind of like a long-term goal. We know that that's kind of like we set the intention to go in that direction. There's some people who have cultivated that humanness to the degree that is astonishing. The lovely pianist who died at age 109 or 110, somewhere around there, Alice Herzsumme, Czech pianist who survived the Holocaust in Theresienstadt playing the piano. But all of her family was killed. Her husband, her parents, her siblings. And when years later, when German newspaper people would come and interview her, they would say, "Don't you hate us?" And she would answer, "No. Every human being has the capacity to be evil and to be kind." Now that's really quite a evolved spirit. And that's wonderful, because she could have lived the rest of her life bitter. She had a reason, right? But there was not one drop of bitterness in her. I find that really, really admirable. And we live happier. It's healthier for everyone. So it's possible. You know, people like Gandhi did it. Yeah. Thanks for the question. And we have a couple more minutes if anybody has. Yeah.
In my work, I work with teachers on a method of facilitating discussions about art to build critical thinking with their students mm-hmm. over time. And I work with schools for 3 years, so teachers have to learn how to listen. Mm-hmm. And they paraphrase their students' thoughts, and they don't add their own. And when I was learning this method, I found it a little difficult because I wanted to add what I thought about the painting.
Yeah.
But this interesting shift happened at certain points along the way that I see the teachers do, which has to do with there's a kind of freedom and ease when you don't have to be the expert.
Mm-hmm.
And you're released mm-hmm. from that pressure.
Yeah.
And you can be present enough to actually listen.
Yeah.
And then this whole other relationship starts to get put in play, which is that you become really curious about what's going to happen when you open that up. And you have another tool to use with your students because they begin to say, they begin to feel as if they can say whatever they would like.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. In the method, they have to back up their ideas with evidence. So in light of the evidence, whatever they want to add is accepted. And it's a form of brainstorming and debate. It's a really powerful practice for teachers. And what yeah. I've found, just to finish, is that teachers often go through a trajectory of completely freaking out mm-hmm. about teaching this way in these short discussions that spill over to everything they do, to they move from there to kind of a paradigm shift where they realize that they know so much more about their students than they did. And
nice.
They're starting to see their students as so much smarter
wow.
than they thought because they actually are asking a six-year-old, what's going on in this picture? And they're hearing them make critical commentary and deducing, and it's incredible. So I always get a huge kick out of year three with these schools because that's often happening with them.
Say the last part again.
Oh, just when I get to year three with these with schools and teachers because
yeah.
the kids are so, so smart and they're so capable. And they've been that way, but they, you know, they're getting to shine more than
That's
they
beautiful.
Did in the past.
Beautiful. Thank you. And you know, it reminded me what the first question, this not having to be the expert. Maybe one can think about that. It's like, I'm on vacation when I go home. I don't have to be the expert. I don't have to solve the problem. I can just listen. Listen empathically. Great. Thank you. We have a little bit more time.
But I also think, to add to what you just said, it's not just when you go home. I mean, maybe your job is to solve problems, but what if you let people solve their own problems at work, too? And how would that change things, kind of like it does with the students?
Yeah. Yeah, totally right. You know, what I was pretty, when I said what I said, I was thinking of the situation this man described, you know, having the kind of job where you are like an engineer and you're given problems and you have to sit down at the computer and figure out solutions. So that's the kind of situation I was thinking. But yes, of course, at work, it's so important with the human relations, you know, that we are also able to bring this. Yeah, very definitely. Thank you. Yeah. So good. Good discussion. So good being here, and you have a very lovely rest of the week.